Bloomberg Law with June Grosso and Michael Best. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
A managing director is suing Bank of America for gender discrimination and retaliation for complaining about illegal or unethical practices by her colleagues. Megan Messina, a co-head of the Global Structured Credit Products team, said she was the victim of egregious pay disparity, getting a third of the $5.5 million paid to a male colleague with the same title. She alleges her boss ran a bros club, banned her from client events, and asked her demeaning questions. But Messina's allegations go beyond personal discrimination and cover the bank's dealings with clients, with charges of front-running, lying to customers, and manipulating bond prices. A spokesman for the bank said it takes all allegations of inappropriate behavior seriously and investigates them thoroughly. Our guest is Professor Michael Selmy of George Washington University Law School. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about this lawsuit, about the gender allegations in them.
Well, the allegations in what is a lengthy complaint involve treatment that she received primarily by one other member of the firm. But she argues that the company condoned his actions, and she essentially argues that she was treated, I think at one point she says, the equivalent of an intern in what was an all-boys club. She was the only woman who worked in this particular area for the bank, and she was treated in a disrespectful way and also denied compensation. At the heart of her complaint is that she was being underpaid compared to her male colleagues, and that resulted from the discriminatory treatment she was receiving in being essentially dismissed as a director from the company, that she just wasn't being treated seriously as the others. And her compensation, even though high, alleges was about half of what similar men were being paid.
Now, she alleges that her immediate supervisor said in their first meeting, asked her, Have you colored your hair? Have your eyes always been that blue? Are those likely to turn out to be he said, she said, a lot of this? And then how much impact do they have?
Well, it's always, these cases are always difficult because there's usually not witnesses to statements like that, so it would be the credibility of the two parties. But there's ways in which you can establish that it was likely said or not said. Whether it becomes a he said, she said, it's hard to know at this stage of the complaint. But they're likely to be relevant. How relevant, it's hard to say. Comments like that would not, although inappropriate, I would think, in the workplace, would not rise the level of being discriminatory on their own. The law makes a distinction between some statements which can be seen as evidence of discrimination directly and those that cannot. And these would fall under circumstantial evidence that would be relevant to proving discrimination, but they wouldn't be sufficient. But they're clearly, I think, going to be part of her, probably not a central part, but a strong part of her case.
Is the central part of her case the pay discrimination? And does pay inequity prove anything by itself?
By itself, I don't think the pay inequity is sufficient, because what she shows in a chart that she has is that there was people were paid wide-ranging amounts, and so there could be gender-neutral explanations for why her pay was so much lower. She does, in the complaint, establish, but it's just a complaint at this point. She states that there are people who are far lower than her in the chain of command who are being paid either the same or, in some cases, more than her. And all of that will be important evidence, and it will be something that the bank will have to overcome by establishing that the pay disparities, if true, because they're still she still has to establish that those pay disparities are true, but that the pay disparities are the product of discrimination, not just that there's a disparity. She does have a claim under the Equal Pay Act where it's possible that just the disparities, if she can show that she's being paid differently for doing the same work as men, that it's possible that she could establish a claim under that statute. It's actually not a very commonly used statute. But for the most part, she's still going to have to establish that the pay disparity is a product of discrimination.
She has been told not to come into the office. Is that clearly an example of retaliation because there's been no other evidence of why she'd be told not to come into the office?
Well, we do, again, with just the complaint, it's hard to know exactly. She has been told not to come in, and she was suspended before she filed the complaint. And then after filing the complaint, it appears that she was told directly, again, not to come into the office. That's not so common. This is a complicated case because it involves allegations of not just discrimination, but also whistleblowing claims where she's alleging that she was being retaliated against for raising complaints about the business practices, the trading practices of Bank of America. And she has there's a significant amount of her complaint that involves those trading practices. So there's two aspects to her complaint. One's the gender discrimination. The other is reporting the Bank of America for what she believed was inappropriate conduct.
That the customer's trade will probably move the market price. Let's take the simplest possible example. Your customer wants to buy 100,000 shares of stock X, and you know that a trade that large will move the price up 2 points. So you decide to buy 10,000 shares in your own name so that you can make the profit when his much larger 100,000 share trade moves the market up 2 points. That injures the customer by taking away the more available stock, and it gives you a benefit at the customer's expense, and that will violate Rule 10b-5, and it's very traditional that that is a fraud offense. What she's alleged is somewhat different because it's occurring in the debt markets where you don't have continuous trading. Her client had an interest in buying something called a collateralized loan obligation, which is a pool of large-sized corporate loans or medium-sized corporate loans. And you have to go out and search for people who will sell that. She wanted her broker at the firm to do that, and he said, if we find such a seller, we want to buy it ourselves. Now, that's not purely impersonal, and that's not purely impermissible, because you, in effect, are seeking to buy securities based on your own interest rather than on a desire to resell them to the customer at a markup. So it's more debatable whether this is illegal, although it could well be ethically questionable if you were sure that that customer wanted those securities and it was relying on you. So we have a gray area here, not an open and shut front-running case on the facts that she's alleged.
This is similar to a longstanding investigation of the bank by federal prosecutors in North Carolina of engaging in front-running or trading ahead of client orders that was revealed in about 2 years ago, in 2013, a federal investigation of Bank of America traders was disclosed by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. Does the fact that nothing's happened mean that they've decided that this is not enough to bring charges?
I don't know what's happened, and it's always going to be a private investigation until they go public with a decision to prosecute or not. But the difference in terms of what they were investigating in North Carolina was actual orders from customers and then the bank buying for its own account and possibly reselling to the customer, which costs the customer some markup. Here, on the facts she's alleged, we don't know that her customer actually bought or made any order at all. That's a slight difference. But you're right, you could have unethical behavior that could offend FINRA's rules, which are broader than the SEC's rules, and require you to live up to a very high standard of commercial honor. And it does sound sneaky to most of us that if your customer wants to buy and you instead buy for yourself and then tell him you can sell it to him at a higher price, that does sound like you're abusing your customer.
Now, Michael, she also filed a charge of discrimination with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the lawsuit said. How does that work in conjunction with this lawsuit?
Well, one of the things that's interesting about the lawsuit is that it's all very recent. So the complaints have been filed with the agencies just last week, and she was suspended from work, I think, just a week ago, too. So these would be independent investigations. I think she has three different ones, would have three different ones going on. The EEOC would investigate her sex discrimination claim, and the Equal Pay Act claim would likely be part of it or the pay disparity, because the pay disparity is also being challenged under the statute that the EEOC regulates. So the EEOC will be one of the primary agencies investigating her claims.
Michael, don't you normally have to exhaust your remedies with the EEOC before you go ahead with a lawsuit or at least let them explore it?
Yes, and that is an unusual part of the case. They say that when they have exhausted, they will conform the complaint. This complaint could easily, or part of the complaint, that the part of the complaint that relies on the agency allegations could easily be dismissed until they have the proper documents from the EEOC. So it is highly unusual to file the complaint so quickly before the agencies have an opportunity to investigate.
John, she's claiming Dodd-Frank whistleblower protection. Tell us about whistleblower protection under the Dodd-Frank Act.
Really two things, because I'm sure she has another claim also.
It's very complicated, this case. It's not as easy.
I admit there's a lot of things going on here, but if you are a whistleblower under first Sarbanes-Oxley and then some additions under the Dodd-Frank Act, and you are retaliated against any way, reduced in status or pay because you reported something up the ladder or to the government, then you're entitled to protection and you're entitled to compensation and protection against dismissal. So that's one claim she has. Under Dodd-Frank, she's also entitled to a bounty if there is a penalty levied by the SEC. For example, if the SEC were to eventually decide and fine her employer, let's say $1 million for engaging in some kind of improper manipulation in the securities markets, she would be entitled to an award which could be 30% of that total amount. And just yesterday, the SEC gave an award of $5 million to a whistleblower. So she gets a percentage of what the SEC recovers as a penalty, and while she hasn't fully alleged that yet, I think she is waiting to amend her complaint if she can convince the SEC that this is a claim that deserves investigation.
So, John, she only has to report up the ladder in her own company? She doesn't have to go outside to be considered a whistleblower?
She can go first to her own employer, or she can go first to the government. If she goes to the government will eventually give the charges to the company and ask for a response. It's possible even to file these kind of allegations anonymously through your lawyer. The lawyer can present the facts to the SEC, and there's no identification who the customer is. But ultimately, if the SEC recovers a penalty and you are the first to provide the key information to the SEC, you're entitled to a whistleblower reward, a bounty, of at least 20% and up to significantly more.
Michael, there have been many other claims of bias on Wall Street against female bankers, including being paid less and tolerating demeaning conduct. How have any of those been settled, or have lawsuits gone to conclusion?
Yes, these claims against the different banks and investment bankers go back at least to the 1970s, and most have been claimed. There's actually been a number of them against Bank of America. Most have been settled over time, and there's a couple pending currently. This is different in at least the respect that this is not a class action case. Most cases are class action cases when they're brought along these lines. This is just an individual case in that, but many of the allegations are similar to allegations that have been raised going back to the 1970s, but primarily in the 1990s when there was a wave of cases filed against securities firms in particular, all of which settled.
This is certainly a complicated case. Michael, it seems like it is crying out to be a settled case. They offered her, according to her complaint, $500,000, which is not even close to a year's salary for her. Do you see this as a settlement possibility? Quickly, because we're running out of time.
Most of these cases do end up in settling. I think this is too early to tell. She has her salary, annual salary, somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 million, and I think she's alleging lost wages in about $8 million. So the $500,000 doesn't seem likely to cut it.
I was only looking at the bonus. Okay. Thank you both for being on Bloomberg Law and helping explain this rather complicated case. That's Professor Michael Selmy of George Washington University Law School and Professor John Coffey of Columbia Law School.
You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekday afternoons at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, in San Francisco on 960 AM and 103.7 FM HD2, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119.